Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. It is Wednesday. Those are the biggest news days. And I think the streak is alive. I think this is a pretty big one. Jared Jackson, what do you think? What do you think of the news today?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, somewhat, sometimes. I always expect a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, you know, in order for me to come on, I need some level of standards that fit what I plan on bringing every day. So, I mean, if this is, you know, Trump continues to go down this line of ridiculousness. I mean, okay, I'll concede. Rudy Giuliani is amazing.
That's a good story. That's a good story. And we've got a lot of other news besides. Quick personal note before we get the show started. I mention this mainly because it's JR. And in the first few months of the pandemic, JR had this really awful habit of like telling me how much better shape he was getting in. He's getting all healthy in the pandemic. As I'm like basically becoming Ted Cruz before your very eyes. And I bring this up. So
I do.
I think about it all the time. So I like to work out at the gym, and obviously I have not been able to do that for 9 months or something like that. The longest time in my adult life that I've gone without a real workout. Like I commute to work on my bike and I do little things like that, but not an actual workout. And I don't use trainers, so that hasn't really been an option. But my wife, who has an awesome trainer that she does remote, you know, like Zoom stuff on, she bought me as our anniversary present a few sessions with this trainer. And yesterday was my first session with the trainer. And I think I might die, actually. I am more sore than I've been the entire pandemic. And not from doing things that, as like, if I were to step outside of myself and predict how would this affect me, the stuff we did doesn't seem like it should have killed me, but I think she might have killed me. I think this trainer might have murdered old John.
Wait. Okay. So also more background, you guys. I'm sorry to stretch this out, but John and I used to somewhat regularly run into each other at the gym at like 6 a.m. Yeah. Back when life was normal. And so John was swole. He had a particular workout. He followed the Rock Dwayne Johnson's workout routine. He had a paper and notepad. Dude was swole.
I did.
So the fact that he's sore from one workout is actually surprising, because he was a regular guy before as far as hitting the gym. And then number two, the fact that you didn't see it coming, because I do practice once a week with my kid. They do a little baseball stuff. And I threw pitches to every kid. It's probably 8 or 9 of them. Mm-hmm. I'd say I threw 40 pitches to each one in the cages. My legs were sore, bro. I was like, when did I expected my shoulder maybe, you know, but like my hammies, because I think I took a step every throw, right?
Yeah.
Every throw I took a step. And, you know, nine kids, 50, 40 pitches for the piece. That's tons of throws. But
yeah. Wow.
So nothing, things that are nothing will get you.
Yeah, apparently. Well, like, you know how like if your car is going to be sitting for like a month, you're supposed to start it up and move it a little bit just for a minute. I think that is true for the body too. I don't think you can go a year without doing anything other than talking at a lens. But I sometimes get sore from doing YouTube, you know, it's a full body workout. Anyway, thank you for walking not down memory lane, but more like the lane that leads to my grave, because I think I'm closer today.
Well, yeah. Honestly, as for my story, I've done nothing and lost some weight, and you've done nothing and you've only gained like 2 pounds.
Going in the opposite direction. Yeah. Well, yeah, I didn't start the pandemic in fabulous shape. Anyway, I'm basically Ryan Reynolds. That's what I'm saying. Shirt off, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Anyway, new sexiest man in America. Shirt off, I'm Michael B. Jordan. I just am. Like, I don't have to do anything. Anyway, okay, so we've got a full hour of basically this for you, and theoretically a little bit of politics as well. So if you're already watching, as many of you are, whether on Twitter or YouTube, the chat, the website, the app, anything like that, please share the stream, like the stream, and you can comment along as we always do. We will be responding to those as we go. And let's start off by saying, Pawnbroken, thank you for gifting a sub over on Twitch. Appreciate that. I've always got the Twitch and the YouTube chat open. And with that, why don't we jump into the news?
Let's do it.
This morning, Donald Trump was triumphant in that sort of Twitter way that he is, that doesn't mean anything, and we get to watch from the outside knowing the result of the election and laugh at, saying in Detroit, there are far more voters than people. Nothing can be done to cure that giant scam. I win Michigan. So wait, but we know that Michigan went for Joe Biden. So why all of a sudden this morning is he so hyped about Michigan? And not just in that tweet, I'm not gonna burden you with reading the rest, but take a look at this little quick screenshot if you can make it out. This is just a portion of the tweets he sent out this morning about Michigan and other states. Virtually every single one has the "this claim about election fraud is disputed" tag. How he still has a Twitter account when all he is doing is spreading misinformation, I will never understand.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. I do have a theory though about why he is on such a Twitter spree, and it's that last night didn't go the way he wanted it to. And if you were doing what I was doing and probably what JR was doing, which was, you know, we get off work but we're still following politics, in real time it was a trip. But let me catch you up on what happened and why we got to this crazy place this morning. Early in the night, just last night, news broke that the Wayne County Board of Canvassers voted 2-2 in Michigan along party lines on certification of the election results. The two Republicans on the board voted against it. So it's deadlocked on party lines, meaning that the votes are not going to be certified. And that is obviously an area that Trump, because it includes Detroit, Trump has no interest whatsoever in any of those votes being counted. And virtually every Republican, whether a regular Trump fan or a member of the media, has decided, oh no, we just get to say that the predominantly black city just doesn't get its votes to count. And that's cool. We don't live in a racist country or anything. So that happened. And Trump was very excited about this, saying, wow, Michigan just refused to certify the election results. I don't know, all of a sudden that was a Californian's voice. Having courage is a beautiful thing. The USA stands proud. And the reason of the stream is titled Trump spikes the football on the 2-yard line, we will get to in just a second. But at least I want to give JR a chance to jump in. Man, he was really happy when he thought Detroit wouldn't get counted.
Yeah, he's like, dream come true. This is what I've been working towards. Finally, I get some people, maybe some people that have a position of power to do my bidding. Before, I was just yelling to the ether about how unfair this is, and then pushing Rudy Giuliani, and then pushing, who was it, Pam Bondi, and the rest of my loser attorneys to go and try and battle these fights for me. I need some action. I need someone that's in a position of power to actually do something. This was like the beginning of his dream. And, you know, as we know, all dreams end. But so I just want to point out one other thing. Yeah, one other thing about this his list of tweets that you were talking about a minute ago. So the first one, Detroit, you know, former voice of people, nothing can be done. So there's multiple constant tweets with all of these disclaimers on them. They wouldn't let Republicans in, poll watchers into the counting rooms, unconstitutional. So constant complaining. So again, I think because in the modern era we're a little bit we forget that this is a president of the United States. Yeah. There's things that we used to always say, presidents are inspirational. We're gonna quote our presidents in the future. We do that. What are the quotes from this guy gonna be? So again, he's yelling into Twitter. So you got previous presidents that say all these things. 99% of failures come from people who make excuses. I mean, even Obama had some good tweets. It's not a red state or a blue state, it's the United States. All those things that people are gonna always remember that people said. You know?
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy, efforts and courage are not enough without purpose and direction. Donald Trump, 2020. They stole it from me. I win Michigan. This is the legacy that we're now seeing for our presidents, hopefully not continuing on into the future, but definitely from the past. I'm sure many of these presidents were disastrous in their own ways, but they had quotes that you're going to remember. What quotes are we going to remember from this guy?
Yeah, well, one quote, we don't have it like for sure, but I have a feeling it was said was dope. And the reason for that is that Trump was prematurely declaring victory. And not just Trump, all the right wingers. Twitter was just aflame with, yes, all of these black voters aren't gonna count. It's amazing, our dreams are coming true. And then around the time of the president's tweet, they followed up with a unanimous vote to certify the vote, but calling on the Secretary of State to conduct an audit addressing some clerical errors. So they will, I guess, get to hide behind, well, they're still gonna be auditing it. Okay, fine, but the votes are gonna count. You know why? Because this is America, we're technically a democracy, votes are supposed to count. And so that was, I think, less than 20 minutes after his tweet, they came back and said, oh, we're gonna do the crazy radical thing where like all these votes actually do count and they affect the outcome of the election.
He responds so quickly, 20 minutes later, they switched it back. Like again, this president who they said is hunkered down in his bunker at the White House, because he's afraid of coming and showing his face and the embarrassment. This guy is so on top of everything that's being happening in these litigious moments. He's tweeting immediately about it that only 20 minutes later they reversed their decision. He is already on record loving it. Do yeah. something else with your life. Hey, maybe finish this term in your lame duck presidency.
Exactly. And you know, I want to read just one tweet from Representative Rashida Tlaib, who said, "It's plain and simple, folks. The Republican members of the Wayne County Board of Canvassers put politics above their duty to our residents. Suggesting that all of Wayne County can be certified except for Detroit is horrifyingly racist and a subversion of our democracy." Representative Tlaib is 100% right. And it's like that, you know, the story I did yesterday with Jason Carter about the I think it was in Michigan, actually, a deputy who had this racist meme about Kamala Harris. It's just, no, you openly racist. Like Detroit, oh, are those voters black? Oh, well, then no, they don't count. And they just all agree. Like, just go around the country finding cities where people tend not to be pale and they don't count. Atlanta, oh, real suspect, they don't count either. Odd that it always comes down to that. And they never have to acknowledge that this is racist. It doesn't change the result. We know what it is. Yeah. But it is annoying that they'll do the racism, but they won't claim the title that they work so hard to earn.
Yeah, let's keep it real. Now, this has always been the case. Like, they'll delegitimize black and brown areas in the country. It's happened throughout history in this country. So the difference is what they didn't foresee was enough people recognizing the racism that has been brewing, that has been fomented in the country since the beginning. They didn't expect that this year. That's why the protests in the streets, the fact that every other race joined in with this chorus of people saying what's been wrong in our country, they didn't expect that. And they weren't ready to fight back against it. So they're still left on the same playbook of, let's just blame those black and brown folks and then people will go along with it. Because that's the way it's always been. It's hard to do that now when enough of those people that you need to convince this of yeah. are now on the right side, you know?
Yeah.
And now their knives aren't sharp enough to deal with these realities.
Yeah. Now, we're gonna zoom out for 1 second. Looking ahead to the future, we don't know. We can't say for sure exactly what the long-term effects of this election and especially the way it is being contested will be. Maybe we'll be lucky, and in 4 years, no one will even remember this, you know, period of turmoil that we're in right now. And the next Republican who gets walloped in the popular vote will just concede. Maybe we'll be that lucky, but maybe not, because there's more and more survey information coming out showing that one of the legacies looks like it's going to be that Republicans just don't accept elections anymore. And when I say Republicans, I don't mean Donald Trump here. That's obvious. I mean like their voters. There's a new survey, a new poll from Reuters that found 68% of Republicans said that the presidential election had been rigged. As did 16% of Democrats for some reason. And while only 5% of Republicans said they believe President Donald Trump had won the election, that number changed to a majority when they were asked whether Trump had rightfully won the election. Now, overall, 55% of all respondents said the election was legitimate. I guess that's the good news, that a very narrow majority of all of America believes this election that Joe Biden crushed Donald Trump in 6 million votes easily in the popular vote by the time we're done counting it, because New York is taking their sweet ass time to do that, let alone the 306 electoral college votes that has been described by people like Donald Trump as landslide, blowout, historic, a huge victory. We get 55% that are like, I guess. And a huge majority of Republicans say that it was rigged and that Trump actually won. And maybe they'll change their mind. Maybe they'll forget this over time. But right now, it looks like it is, as with everything, with every fact, it either makes me comfortable or it's fake news.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We've set up this situation now where no matter what the reality is, there's going to be a source of someone, at least enough people to back you up to, I guess, satisfy your need to feed whatever narrative you've been believing this whole time. You no longer need to read something and go, okay, that's confirmed or not confirmed. It's just, this is what I think, and I need to find something to confirm that for me. And until I find that, I'm gonna just keep searching and yelling at everyone else that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And now there's enough sources they can find it. I mean, we didn't talk about it, but there was, you know, there's folks who always talk about, they reach out to OAN or, oh, no, my new source is now OAN because Fox is going off the rails. Well, Fox no longer serves the purposes anymore. So now you're moving on to something else.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, look, I think this is far, far more common on the right, but there are people of all varieties that really just want media that tells them everything they think is true. I've described it as drugs in the past. At some point, you get sort of used to it, used to what you're getting. You want a more refined form. OAN, that is, they're following that business model, the business model of the heroin dealer, I guess. Fox News is 3% impure. Okay, they question Trump 3% of the time when Chris Wallace had a particularly good night's sleep. And you know what? They've found, I guess, their Walter White in this metaphor, and OANN can get to 99.9% purity. And some people are going to chase that purity. Another poll, Monmouth, 77% of Trump voters think Biden won because of fraud. Okay, so I guess 23% of Republicans don't think that Biden's win was due to fraud. Biden's win, by the way, which I understand, you get to this position by thinking that all polls are 100% wrong and all that, but Joe Biden was literally never losing to Donald Trump in polls from even before he declared his primary run. So to go through like a year and 2/3 of no indication that Trump is leading. Sure, plenty of indications that it might be close, but not that like, well, wait, Trump was winning the whole time and now all of a sudden it flips. There was none of that. And yet almost every single Red Hatter thinks that this thing was decided due to fraud.
Well, they set it up that way. The first thing is so frustrating. Since the polls were off before and they were off again this time, That was galvanized. They said, okay, let's make sure we tell everyone a million times. Polls, 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 suck, 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 polls, suck, polls, suck, polls, suck. So then when the polls are saying certain things and they weren't exactly right, people just go to, I remember that someone said polls suck a million times. That's right. Okay. So yeah. I got that. Check that box. Now the night of the election, Trump is leading in some states. Okay, check that box. Okay, it's a fraud. That's all they need. They push these two narratives long enough that people believe those two things, and that's all they need to go with to continue to push this same thought process.
I hope that this goes away. And look, if you go back to the wake of the 2016 election, where there's some Democrats that think that it was fraudulent, sure, there were some. I don't think the numbers were like this, but there was some. But this is a crazy amount. And the thing is, like, it would be easy to think, you know, everybody's feeling really emotional right now in the wake of the election. It's only been a couple of weeks, but people will calm down at some point. But will they? Will they with Fox News? Like, Fox News is gonna acknowledge Joe Biden's legitimacy in a month or two, that Breitbart is gonna suddenly become a little bit more mature. Ben Shapiro is gonna stop being the tiny little hobgoblin that he is. No, anybody who currently thinks that Biden won only because of fraud is going to have that reinforced a million times over for literally months, if not years. And a lot of it will be coming from Trump too, because he's tweeting, I win Michigan. Do you really think that in 2 years he won't tweet that I really won Michigan? Dude still talks about the Electoral College margin for 2016 now. Yeah. I don't think this, and that was one that he won. One that he lost. His last words are gonna be, I really won, vote observers.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic. Or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yesterday, Rudy Giuliani assumed direct control of the Trump legal efforts in Pennsylvania. And so this old, I'll say man, was going into court again for the first time in literally decades. That is a tall order for someone like him who is so barely clinging to reality that he doesn't know when he's in a Borat movie. But anyway, it happened. The one time New York City mayor, who is President Trump's personal lawyer, took over the federal lawsuit from Pennsylvania attorneys and got permission to represent the campaign at a hearing in Williamsport, where his first act was to ask Judge Matthew Brand if he could remove his mask. Not his COVID mask, he doesn't wear those, literally the bit of flesh that is loosely draped over his skull. Anyway, Giuliani, a last minute addition to the Trump team's legal roster for the pivotal hearing, personally presented the campaign's arguments in court. In the first federal case, he has argued in nearly three decades. He varied between struggling at times to comprehend the judge's questions on finer points of the law and boldly speculating at others about widespread fraud and malfeasance. So the main issue, and there are several that we'll get to, the main issue that Rudy Giuliani was facing was that there is no evidence to point to of fraud, and he doesn't know what day it is or what room he's in. So when you combine those things, it results in something crazy. Lacking evidence of specific wrongdoing, Giuliani cited everything from a county commissioner race in Las Vegas to dubious historical claims that late Chicago mayor Richard Daley manipulated returns back in 1960 to help elect John F. Kennedy. During the course of oral arguments, Giuliani offered varying estimates of 680,000 to 770,000 to 1.2 million ballots cast in the Keystone State that he claimed were illegal. Depending on the minute, he couldn't remember how many it was. As far as we're concerned, Your Honor, he said, those ballots could have been from Mickey Mouse, who he thought was sitting next to him in court. But anyway, we have more insanity. That's sort of the overview that he's not even speaking particularly about the case he's in court to argue. He's just pretending he's on Laura Ingraham.
Isn't it like our right to be able to see these proceedings? You know, this is about the election of the United States of America based on what the citizens voted, and many citizens who are concerned about the outcome of the election. If you're a Trump MAGA supporter, how come you don't want to see these proceedings? How come you don't want to see the evidence that Rudy Giuliani is laying down in front of this judge and impressing him at every turn? How come we can't see this? I said this yesterday in the production meeting. I was like, man, I don't watch court shows. My parents do that. The Judge Judy's and stuffs of the world,
I
right?
I don't either.
Those aren't entertaining to me. This would be the most entertaining court show of all time. If we're talking about ratings, Donald Trump, let's get this on TV. I want to see this. This could serve dual purpose. We can see all your evidence, and everyone cannot be convinced of all this widespread voter fraud that Rudy Giuliani is laying down in the middle of court. And we can all have a nice, entertaining afternoon watching him flail around and scream and spill his coffee on his crotch in the middle of court. This would be great. Why can't we see it? It really should be. I mean, in all seriousness, why can't we see it? This is our electoral process. This is our judicial process at work. We're citizens. We pay for this. Let's see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, if I like listed five things he actually did and threw in one, like spilled coffee on his crotch that didn't happen, I defy you to predict which one didn't happen, because this stuff is bananas. It is Dr. Johnny Bananas. So let me give you just a few things. And honestly, if you're interested, if you really want to see how baddie this guy is mentally and physically, there are Twitter threads that go over lots of the transcript. You can find all that. I'm not going to burden you with that, but he mistook the judge for a federal judge in a separate Pennsylvania district who rejected a separate Trump campaign case. In Rudy's defense, they have lost in so many court cases. How could anyone expect to keep all the judges straight? He acknowledged later in the hearing that he didn't know what the term strict scrutiny meant, which, look, if you're watching this and you don't know what strict scrutiny is, that's fine. You're a regular person. He's been a lawyer for 300 years and he doesn't know what strict scrutiny is. But that at least is a sort of legalese sort of thing. Okay, what about just regular words? Here's a little back and forth that we're actually going to have the full dialogue for. So he says, In the plaintiff's counties, they were denied the opportunity to have an unobstructed observation and ensure opacity. I'm not quite sure I know what opacity means. It probably means you can see, right? The judge responded, it means you can't. And Giuliani said, big words, your honor. But they weren't. They weren't big words, and it wasn't a big brain. The word opacity, I don't want to be an elitist or anything. I don't think that's a tough one for a lawyer.
This is the thing. Every once in a while, you run across some vocabulary words maybe you used to know, maybe you haven't used them forever, and you forget, right? I can give a pass on that because it happens to me. But you're in court, and you're talking about the transparency of the election and how things were hidden and how the people, your election viewers weren't, or whatever the hell they're called, your election observers weren't allowed into the proceedings, and they were screwed over in this way, and they did this to us. You have to know the vernacular based off of what you're arguing. That's all. It's fine.
Yeah.
If you're talking football, it's okay if you don't know what the word means. It's fine because you don't really have to use it when you're talking about football. You probably have to know about the pass rush defense, maybe the linebacker, maybe the quarterback, maybe potentially the wide receiver or a slot receiver. Maybe you want to talk about nickel defense. You should know these things when you're talking about football. When you're talking about things with transparency of your election, maybe you should know what the word is when you're talking about that subject. Just saying. Just a small request.
Yeah, this is the legal equivalent of like desperately trying to get your tag team partner to tag you in and then immediately running into a steel chair. Like, you should have known the chair was coming. You're a wrestler. But he didn't. And there's more to it. It's just sad though. Like, he's a bad guy, so we don't have to have any sympathy for him. But he also shouldn't be involved in any of this. At some point, I don't know if does he have a wife? He's had several. One of his wives should do something, or his family should do something. Someone. He should not be in a court. He should be in a like assisted living environment or something like that. He's not equipped for this. And no, I'm partially joking, and I feel a little bit freed up to do that because he's a really bad guy who is trying to effectively end democracy. So I don't have much sympathy for him. But this is just sad. This is just sad. Yeah.
Also, by the way, they said before he went to court that he hasn't been in a court proceeding in what, since 92 or something.
Yep.
I was like, well, does that really make a difference? Apparently it does.
It does. And that was one day in court. All that. That was one day. But that's our response. Now I want to turn to the right. What does the right think about Rudy Giuliani's first day in court? Well, it depends on who you talk to, but in general, despite how clownish it was, they seem pretty impressed. Here's Sean Hannity's take.
All right, in Pennsylvania, Rudy Giuliani argued the case today. I've heard from more than a few people that he was absolutely brilliant in his arguments today. What's the status on that?
Was it Rudy? Did Rudy message you? Who told you that it was brilliant? He's like, even if we leave aside the fact that he's just continually like admitting to words that he doesn't know the definition of, he's not arguing the case. He's not talking about their actual case in this actual court. And when he rarely touches on it, he doesn't remember the name of the judge. He doesn't remember how many votes they're pretending are invalid. And most of the time he's talking about other centuries, other cities, other stuff that has literally nothing to do with the case. I don't know what that is. It's not brilliant though. I'm fairly sure of that.
Yeah, actually, I would love to know what Kaylee's answer was to that question. Because, you know, it's easy for Sean Hannity because he doesn't have anything. He's like, well, I get to interview, so I don't have to actually say much. Let me just ask the question. I heard that Rudy Giuliani was brilliant. Can you tell us more about that? I would love to know. Like, she'd be fired today, but if she told the truth and went, no, Sean, he wasn't brilliant today.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only real answer you could give to that question.
And it wasn't just him though. So Jenna Ellis, who is this person, I never really understood this person. Like, originally it was just like someone who tweeted about Trump a lot, and now I think she's actually involved in the legal effort. She tweeted, "You media morons are all laughing at Rudy Giuliani, but he appears to have already established a great rapport with the judge, who is currently offering recommendations on martini bars for Team Trump in open court." Okay, that may not demonstrate what you think it demonstrates. It might demonstrate that the judge has identified a bar that Rudy could actually pass. That may be what it is. A room he's qualified to be in.
Well, this has to be.
So anyway,
I hope no. Okay, so when I saw that tweet, I didn't remember who Jenna Ellis was, but I remember there was a name. I was like, oh, this is like one of those comedians who's you know, who's getting a nice boost on Twitter and cracks a nice joke. And then I looked her up. I was like, oh yeah, Jenna Ellis was serious before. Maybe she went into a life of comedy now that it's like a perfect, you know, the soil is ripe for some comedy. And she's serious. I still don't believe she's serious. No, she laughed after that.
We will find out. As of right now, at least, all I can say is that us media morons are laughing. But anyway, not everybody was necessarily positive about Rudy Giuliani. Former White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney had this to say about the choice for him to be their lawyer on the ground.
I still am a little concerned about the use of Rudy Giuliani. It strikes me that this is the most important lawsuit in the history of the country. And they're not using the most well-noted election lawyers. There are folks who do this all of the time. This is a specialty. This is not a television program. This is the real thing. And I was struck by a couple of things that Rudy said in court yesterday. So on one hand, I think it needs to go forward. It absolutely does. I wish that it was being prosecuted a little more efficiently.
It's inefficient to have Rudy. That's a burn on multiple levels.
Next question to Mick. Hey, Mick, so how come there isn't anyone that's reputable that's arguing Trump's case in court? Why hasn't he found anyone that can do it? Why has he fired a few other people that have tried and failed to do it? Maybe there's no case, Mick?
Maybe.
Or maybe it's just Rudy Giuliani. Come on.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Give me more, Mick. I want to hear more about Rudy's performance. But clearly, he thinks, I mean, he even said this isn't TV, which, by the way, Mick's a bad guy and everything. But he's right. And not just that this is funny and I wish it was on TV, but Rudy's strategy basically is to go there and pretend that he's on TV. Because worst case scenario, Trump enjoys it because he wants to hear those conspiracy theories because that's the only language he speaks. Best case scenario, they lose. Best case scenario for them, they lose, and Rudy's strategy of we need to lose to get it to the Supreme Court ends up happening. I don't think that that's going to happen. I'm not sure that he knows what the Supreme Court is anymore, but that seems to be the strategy. Anyway, so some of the reviews positive, if deranged. Other Republicans worried about what it represents to have Trump's like bulldog in this coup is gonna be Rudy Giuliani. What a sad, sad way for America to potentially fall. This morning, the Dems did the only thing they were ever going to do. They chose to continue the leadership of Speaker Nancy Pelosi in the House. She has secured the nomination to lead the Dems amid their narrow majority. Now, it is not finalized. Pelosi is currently running unopposed and only needed a simple majority of the Democratic caucus during the secret ballot vote, but she'll still have to clinch 218 votes on the House floor in January to officially become Speaker. And she has a much narrower majority to work with this time around after Democrats lost more than half a dozen seats on Election Day. So that last sentence, that's what the article says. Let me add a little bit of context. She has a much narrower majority to work with this time around after years of her leadership. She is one of the most powerful Democrats. She weighed in on tons of races. She got involved in choosing people in primaries that could have run differently, might have run different campaigns around different pieces of legislation if they had been led differently by her. So I'm really not gonna have that much sympathy for her new narrower majority, in no small part produced by her complete lack of leadership. JR, what do you think? You surprised?
Okay, I'm not surprised, but this is what frustrates me, because this is, I think, part of why it happens. I've never been big on like media critique or certain articles critique. You know, a lot of folks that talk about politics, we do that from both sides of the aisle. When it's frustrating the way someone writes something because it becomes common knowledge. So there's an article in The Hill that talked about this. And when I read it this morning, it was frustrating because it was a voice vote. Because there's, you know, concerns about health and safety and COVID, right? So the voice vote, the voice vote, people just yell loud enough to be like, okay, the ayes have it. And that's one of the ways we do things still ridiculously. So
weird.
Yeah, they go, are the ayes or nays? Aye. And people can yell loud enough and therefore, okay, I heard Tim in the back. That's great. Okay, so because of that kind of vote, because previous to this, we know that some progressives were challenging Pelosi's leadership positions, and that was a big deal. And they said there's an erosion of defectors, and this reflects the support that she's earned since some previous issues. Does it? Does it really show that? Because in that same paragraph, it says there's losses Democrats suffered at the polls earlier this month. They also suffered some losses in the House. So what about these losses have anything to do with her earning more support from previous defectors? I don't get that. But again, it's written in a sense, if you're just reading straight through it and you don't follow this as closely, you would think, oh yeah, previously there were some people that were against Pelosi within the Democratic Party, and now they've all switched and they're all kumbaya, they're all together and they love everything she's doing. That's not the case. But they're telling everybody that's the case, so that therefore going forward, probably she'll continue to run unopposed and she'll continue to lead the party in the House. But it's not like across the board unanimous decision that everyone loves Nancy Pelosi now. But common knowledge is now saying everyone loves Nancy Pelosi. She's done an excellent job, and any problems that she had before are completely gone, and no one is upset with her. They love her. That's what people are gonna think, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, and look, I'm sure there are many Dems who are probably more moderate, and I would argue probably don't pay that much attention to politics and don't necessarily have as much at stake for themselves for the future, that probably really still like Nancy Pelosi. She's been around for a long time, and she has at least two major skills. One is that she is very good at raising money in the traditional way that Democrats do, with all of the strings attached that that brings, which I would argue is why the majority is narrowing. And the other thing is, every 3.5 months, she does something to tweak Donald Trump, and some people like that. Beyond that, though, like remember 2 years ago when they chose her again that time, and there wasn't much of a challenge. And if you even brought up the possibility that we have a conversation about who the leader should be, just the conversation, that was considered anathema to American politics. So then we had 2 years of her, and what happened? Okay, she impeached him. That's something. I would argue that was not nearly as difficult to do as they made it out to be, considering they had the majority and they could do it basically anytime they want to. The one of the big things they ran on in 2018 was getting the taxes. We never ended up getting that. It took the New York Times getting a portion of it like a month before the election. That was the closest we came. In terms of COVID relief, we got that one bill that was incredibly slanted towards producing like additional, you know, illusory profits for corporations. And then beyond that, what? All of his scandals, the situation with Iran, the lack of interest in dealing with the pandemic, was she capable of producing the biggest toll for him as possible? If they're not gonna fix those problems, he was at least stick it to him, and she was not. And I understand that she and some of her defenders might say, well, what more was she supposed to do? And I would answer that by saying, I don't know, but I'm not the speaker. She was, after decades of experience. We can debate how difficult it might have been to get the job done, but she didn't get the job done. So could we have a conversation, just a brief conversation, about some other paths we could take? Maybe one of the over 200 other Democrats in the House right now would have done things a little bit differently. Maybe the American people should hear about those possibilities. We're about to launch into a new phase of American politics. It's going to be very difficult in different ways than the last one was. Why would we just assume that we're gonna have the exact same leadership? But that's what they did. We have Chuck Schumer, we have Nancy Pelosi. Something hypothetically could derail that between now and inauguration, all that, but it's probably not gonna happen. And who has faith that that is the leadership that's gonna get us through this difficult time, that's gonna counter Mitch McConnell, that's gonna set us up to not lose even more seats in the next midterms, that's not gonna work to produce effectively an electorate that's so frustrated by the lack of progress in addressing the economic problems and COVID and all of that, that you're not gonna have some other proto Donald Trump in office in 4 more years?
This plays the entire process. It plays the entire process in a certain way. Like, the thought is that it's a possibility that she can be ousted, or that maybe there's someone that can oppose her. Maybe there's, you know, this is a thing that she's getting renominated to be speaker again. But then in the same breath, we'll say that it's a done deal. So what are we talking about it being such an accomplishment for, if no one's opposing her and no one's supposed to oppose her? Like, it's either one or the other. Either someone's opposing her and there's some kind of challenge to her leadership, or no one is and everyone loves her. But the thing is, you can't play it both ways and say that, oh yeah, she should just be on board and there's nobody opposing her, but then also congratulate her for being unopposed. Yeah. Like, she's not doing anything. She's just going unopposed. So there's no accomplishment there, but they still give her that credit. It's kind of weird. I don't know. It's maybe I'm digging too deep or trying to find some odd layers that don't really exist. But you can't give credit to someone that hasn't done anything, especially as you're congratulating her for not having to do anything.
Yeah, it's
which one is it?
Just have a vote. Like, it's just no, it's just she obviously will be the person and you don't get to challenge it. You don't get to even suggest that there should be a challenge. Yeah, if you do, you'll be considered the most radical person.
Yeah, that's really what they're saying. And if you say anything different, then you're crazy. And then again, if people do say it, then
yeah. Well, look, the answer to this is the answer to virtually every question right now. Elect better Dems and get the hell out of there. You know what? Like and by the way, as Jenks said on Dr. Jenks' special last night, none of the awesome progressives in the House are challenging her. And I get it. It probably wouldn't work. But what if they had 25 extra Dems or 50 extra Dems? If they had 100 extra Dems that were good progressives, then maybe they could have. It is a very difficult task. Is a very difficult thing to accomplish, but it's basically our only path to getting the party that we need to get the country that we want. And so that would be my advice going
forward. And the only way to make that happen is enough people to vote down ballot. And it's a shame that down ballot.
And to run.
To run number one. And then once they are running, it's a shame that down ballot voting is Senate and House. You know, that's down ballot. That's pretty important. You know, like we see that as, oh yeah, people vote for president every 4 years. When it comes outside of that, it's just kind of down ballot. You know what down ballot should be? It should be your like a council members or your props and stuff that are in your local communities and you know your state senators. That should be down ballot stuff. Instead, down ballot is senators.
Okay, yeah, they're arguably important, even if they're clowns for the most part. Let's turn to one of these clown senators. Okay. COVID has claimed another notable politician, Chuck Grassley. He's still alive, but he does have COVID. Tweeting, I've tested positive for coronavirus. I'll be following my doctor's orders, CDC guidelines, and continue to quarantine. I'm feeling good. I'll keep up on my work for the people of Iowa from home. I appreciate everyone's well wishes and prayers and look forward to resuming my normal schedule soon. So Chuck Grassley is 87 years old, the second oldest member. 87 isn't the oldest, interesting. Second oldest person in the Senate. And obviously this is a disease that is not only just very, very easy to catch, but for older people is far more dangerous. And so he's third in line to the succession to the presidency right now. He hasn't missed a vote on the Senate floor in 27 years, but might as a result of this. And look, I can't say that I've been following his comments in particular about coronavirus throughout this thing. There's been a lot of bad behavior on the Republican side, but this is a dangerous thing that if you are one of the political elites, you will be better protected and you'll have access to therapeutics and things like that that we won't. But if you're an 87-year-old man, it is still a very real threat. And so this is what a pandemic looks like. Especially one on the upswing as we enter into this dark winter, people like Chuck Grassley, in theory, could be left in its wake.
Man, I mean, we'll see. And then again, like we talked about people that had, you know, some pre-existing conditions. You know, specifically, Chris Christie comes to mind. He has asthma, and then we, as we know, he caught COVID, survived, was treated well. And I don't know, maybe because I haven't looked closely, so maybe it's just my lack of knowledge. But what things were done? And at what rate, you know, we can't base it off of what was happening with President Trump because no one knows and they lied to us that entire process. So if there's a process that goes into treating people to a degree where an 87-year-old man or another guy with serious pre-existing conditions survive with seemingly seems like without much issue, why isn't that happening for everyone? Yes, I know death rates have been changing, but not to the degree where literally all these people who have all these conditions just skate through. There's something else I think needs to be addressed, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that not only did Grassley get it, second oldest senator, just last week, Alaska Congressman Don Young, who's 87, tested positive for COVID, currently the longest serving member of the House. I mean, these are. Like we're doing herd immunity. Remember, I thought a part of your herd immunity was to, you know, quarantine the most at risk. But even them, they're getting it. And Grassley didn't get tested for the coronavirus after Senator Mike Lee, a fellow member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, tested positive last month. I could be wrong, I apologize. But I believe that, wasn't there a photo of Grassley and like Lindsey Graham who had recently been exposed talking? That doesn't mean that they got it, that was a while ago. He probably got it in some other irresponsible gathering of Republicans, but you're not necessarily safe. I mean, there was a photo that went around yesterday of I believe it was Barbara Feinstein walking around the halls of the Senate without a mask. They're being irresponsible, a lot of them, and some of these are not young people. It can affect the young anyway, but they are not. They don't have even that relative protection against this.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, hope they all come through perfectly fine and everything. But this is dangerous. They need to treat it accordingly.
Yeah, there's a political bubble that people always talk about with politicians, even with, you know, supporters, people who just live in certain areas and they think things are only a certain way. This is a literal like political bubble where politicians, they really, I don't know, seemingly, I'm not in there, but when you talk about the paths that cross, they don't seem to really be that concerned about it. Maybe because so many of them have contracted it, but then end up being fine. They're like, okay.
Yeah. Now let's zoom out a bit from that. That's a sort of personal thing, Chuck Grassley. That's an issue now for him and his family. The pandemic continues to just rage out of control. And I understand that it might even start to wear on members of this audience that I go back to these numbers so much, but I feel like not enough people are doing it often enough. So I need to fill in that gap a bit. I want you to take a look at the most recent data from the COVID tracking project. This is for yesterday. 155,000 cases. 1,565 deaths reported in one day, with 77,000 people currently hospitalized in 20 different states. That is the highest level of hospitalizations ever. And for those deaths, 1,565 should sound high because it is. It's also, by the way, the highest reported one day death total since May 14th. That was just a couple of months into the pandemic. And we sort of skated along with occasional dips, occasional spikes, always averaging around 1,000 deaths. And now months and months after that, when supposedly we've got not only more information, but great therapeutics, and we don't need these lockdowns because we know what we're doing now. No, more people are now dying today than have died since just a couple of days into the pandemic. And you're seeing it all over the place. The Midwest is being decimated right now by coronavirus, with numbers that are higher than we had in the early days in the Northeast even. And you're seeing it everywhere, everybody. And we're about to enter into Thanksgiving, so just integrate this into your travel plans, please. For your own sake, for the sake of your families.
This is the thing that was predicted that would happen once fall and winter approached, and everyone said, oh, look at them when they're doomsday and how about you think positively. That's just facts. And the reason you tell people these facts before it gets to that point is so you can prepare. Maybe you don't become one of those numbers. But you know, just like when we first started wearing masks, even us super libs who must love wearing masks every day because we like being oppressed, putting on a mask is annoying. Keeping a mask on is annoying. Walking through a store with a mask on is annoying. Breathing through a mask is annoying. Having a beard with a mask is annoying. Everything is annoying about wearing a mask. But you know what's more annoying is dying. So you live through some of the annoying things, and actually we've gotten used to it. That's the reason why, you know, people make fun of people who drive and you see them wearing a mask. And I've done it too. I was like, oh man, pull the mask on because it's driving me crazy. I couldn't drive by myself in the car with a mask on. Mm-hmm. And the thing is people get used to it. The same way some people have gotten used to wearing a mask so much, the same thing as certain states. I talked about bubbles a second ago. In certain states, so many things were open. Packed bars and clubs and restaurants were open. We don't experience this in Southern California because it's different here. This is our bubble. But they're now used to this. So now that winter is here and they're not used to putting on a mask, what they think is reality is we can walk around with no mask on in crowded bars. I've survived. Now is the time when it's really gonna stack up. And now all that's left is your regularity of not doing anything responsible for yourself and others around you. And the numbers are spiking. And all they can say is, they told us the numbers are gonna spike because this is a big conspiracy.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought the conspiracy that was that we were all pretending the pandemic was bad up until the election, and then we don't have to pretend anymore. Wait, someone needs to call the guy that's faking these numbers because he's doing overtime. No, the numbers are going up and it's very predictable. What a lot of places in America are lacking is not information about the pandemic. We've known effectively everything we need to know to protect ourselves from it for a long time. What is lacking is leadership, both at the federal level, but also at the state level. There are some governors and some mayors that have been doing a very good job, and some have seemed to think from early on that this is a big joke and they've treated it accordingly. I want to show you an ad that you're probably going to remember from earlier in this year. This is from the governor of South Dakota. Take a look at this.
I'm Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota. This is how we do social distancing in our state. Right. Less COVID, more hunting. That's the plan for the future.
Okay, less COVID, more hunting. They got the more hunting. We just saw it in the video. The plan was supposed to be less COVID, but it turns out that sometimes plans go awry because the governor was joking a few months ago in that video. You know what's been happening in the last 7 days? South Dakota, where you can get less COVID and more hunting, has been getting a lot more COVID. And in fact, in the last 7 days, it is number 3 on the highest global mortality rate for COVID. That's the entire world. North Dakota's worse. That's number 1, but we didn't have the funny video for number 1. Number 3, South Dakota, where they thought it was a big funny joke. Number 3, highest mortality ever. Got some of those numbers here. Right now, North Dakota has a rate of 18.2 deaths per million people. South Dakota is slightly lower at 17.4. But that, without context, doesn't really mean much. The US at large over the last 7 days is at 3.3. So South Dakota is doing between 5 and 6 times worse than the country at large. There are some areas of the country that are below that average, that are doing much better, below 2 even. And they're doing 5 or 6 times worse. And it's not exclusively up to the government to do something about that. But can you really be surprised when they pretend that the entire thing is a big joke and it's full of Republicans that believe Fox News when they tell them that this isn't a thing that you have to worry about, that people are gonna get sick and a lot of those people are going to die? I believe it was in North Dakota. We said just yesterday, 1 in 1,000 people in that state have already died from COVID. And the numbers are going up now. They didn't even have much COVID in the first half of the pandemic.
So as this reality comes to many of these states that are seeing these numbers, it's gonna be hard to continue to deny it. Because of course, in the summertime, as they said, it was a plateau in many states because, you know, summer activities, people are outside and there's better opportunities for that. But as this is happening the way that they've said it would happen, some of these governors are now having to reverse their decisions and say, okay, now we need to ask some social distance. I mean, the governor of Iowa was one of them, Kim Reynolds. She had to come forward and tell everyone, this is not a suggestion. This is gonna be a mask and distancing mandate. So as they can begin to see reality, what is the reaction then gonna be from their constituents who they've been lying to before and telling them there's nothing to worry about and to continue on with your lives as normal? And now you have to switch it. Now it's, well, I know who they're gonna blame because Biden won the election. Now he's swinging the iron fist of dictatorship at all these governors and telling them what to do. That's gonna be the answer. But in reality, anytime you see what's happening, you have to respond. And just because they're responding late doesn't mean that it's not a real response. They're gonna respond late and the people are gonna revolt that because of the way that they approached it the first time. Just, it's so much easier just to do things the right way. And then you can actually have your Black Friday sales where people are crowding each other and kicking each other and stepping on necks like we want to have happen for some reason. But that's gonna be disputed. War on Thanksgiving, war on Christmas, war on New Year's. That's what we're looking for next.
Oh, we're gonna turn to that in just one moment actually, but I don't doubt that you're right. The war on Christmas, that is so 2011. Now it's all about the war on Thanksgiving. And this is being initiated, I guess, the fight back against that war on Thanksgiving by a man cosplaying as a pile of lumpy mashed potatoes. Take a look at this.
The left has always hated Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving can be interpreted as a religious holiday if you believe in giving thanks to a creator. But they hate Thanksgiving because they believe there is nothing you should be thankful for in America. This is an awful place. It is cancerous, rotten to the core. Tear it all down, burn it from within. Why would you be thankful? Instead, we need a revolution. Remember, as The Students for a Democratic Society radicals once wrote in the 1960s, they said, conflict is the origin of everything. What happens when you're thankful? By definition, you're less likely to be involved and engaged in conflict. Thanksgiving is supposed to de-escalate any sort of pre-existing issues in our country. And now they're using the virus as an excuse for you not to be thankful. We'll be right back.
Oh my God, I just noticed that whiteboard. I want to know what's on that. Okay, so yeah, my brain can't seem to remember from one week to another that Charlie Kirk actually has a show. And I think the reason is I watch it and I think, who is willingly listening to this, let alone looking at it? Man, there is a guy who is made for radio. Why did he turn on his camera if he's gonna start every show looking like he just accidentally woke up from a nap on the beach? Like, why does he look like he's not allowed to sleep? I know that it doesn't matter. It's not the most important thing. But he looks like if he sleeps, it's on a bed of cocaine. How twitchy can one pundit be from week to week?
It's the beginning of the admission that, you know, quarantining is necessary and COVID is real. So he's just telling you how he looks because he's been in quarantine for so long. It's the beginning of the transition. It's a positive thing, John. It's a positive thing. At least he's, you know, he's coming out looking like what most of us look like every day.
That's true. He's finally catching up. And look, I apologize. You know, I shouldn't make it, you know, about like how that person desperately looks like they need help and possibly a drink that's not caffeinated. But this is a bad person. Like, objectively, that entire thing was absolute BS. That is, like, we have production meetings, not on our show, but on the main show we have production meetings. But they literally just, I think they just sit around and think, what BS can we think up to attack them? Like, I think that is honestly what they must do on a daily basis. There's a war on Thanksgiving, you stupid, tiny little stuffing faced man. What are you talking about? I wish I could do Thanksgiving. By the way, I'm gonna do Thanksgiving. I'm just gonna do it with my wife, not with my family, but I'm gonna eat a ton of food because it's fun. That's why. And it doesn't have any link to the religious origins of it, you moron. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's not about we hate being thankful. And the reason we hate Thanksgiving is because you found some radical group that literally 1 in 100 leftists think about on a once a year basis that says conflict is the origins of everything. Yes, the right, they don't like starting fights or anything. The Proud Boys clan, they don't think conflict is important. It's just so fake. It's BS and it's lazy. This isn't even like O'Reilly would, he'd put some effort into it. He wrote books about the war on Christmas. He tried to craft an argument. This next generation of right-wing blowhards, it's such a lazy version of the right-wing blowhards of yesteryear.
You don't have to do as much, and you work within the separation of the country. So of course, the people that you oppose, they're mutants, they're aliens, they hate America, they hate everything about America. They don't celebrate Thanksgiving, they don't celebrate Christmas, they don't celebrate Easter, they don't celebrate Mother's Day and Father's Day because they hate mothers and fathers because they support LGBTQ rights and the family is based on one man and one woman. I can come up with these things really easily because they're all stupid. It's easy to come up with stupid thoughts and say, okay, those aliens that you hate on the left, they hate Thanksgiving. Guess what people on the left do? They eat too much turkey and mashed potatoes and cranberry sauce and everything on Thanksgiving because they're Americans and we've all been brainwashed to be gluttonous on Thanksgiving. That's just the way it is. And oh yeah, they hate Christmas so much. People who have nothing to, ask Cenk Uygur, people who are the biggest atheists in the country celebrate Christmas because it's fun. Hey, guess what else they do? The wide majority of Americans, which I'm not a part of this group, they celebrate Santa Claus. You know, Santa Claus has nothing to do with Christianity. I'm just curious if you guys knew that. Santa Claus is not Jesus, in case all these religious folks didn't realize that. So that war on Christmas to celebrate Santa Claus doesn't make any sense. You know, as you shove people aside and say that Christmas is about Santa Claus, which I don't think it should be. But either way it goes. So you have to have an audience that's willing to suck all this up and just believe everything you tell them. And by the way, in case you didn't know, Thanksgiving it originated as a harvest festival. Thanksgiving for your harvest coming in and you can eat now. That's what it was about. Mm-hmm. That's what it was about. So if you can change the meaning all you want, like Charlie Kirk did, and say some people can see it as a religious holiday. Well, sure, you can see it as a religious holiday if you decide to be stupid about it. Yeah, fine. I'll see Father's Day as a religious holiday because my father was really important to me. So it's my religion. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not a religious thing. You're thinking of Festivus. But anyway, I wanted to give you one response that I saw to it that was attached to the original tweet that I saw, that video from Sarah Silverman. I think it's just very reasonable. Like I get so angry about the grifts that I can't communicate in the calm way that Sarah Silverman will in this video.
I think people just want to be safe over the holiday season and make sure everybody is careful, washes their hands, gets tested before they see their families, wear a mask, all that stuff, just to be extra vigilant because there's been such a big surge in COVID cases. And maybe you've got to experience yourself to know that it's pretty awful to lose someone to this and to not be able to hold their hand or be with them. Anyway, so, you know, this is a time for family, and I just think everyone wants everyone to be real, real, real careful. And I don't know what swath of Democrats you assess these things from, but I don't know who these people are, but I hope you make more friends that are Democrats.
Yeah, the answer is that he doesn't talk to any Democrats because he's not a real person that has real relationships with people. He is a creation of right-wing billionaires, and that's what he is. And after watching that video, we don't generally cover his stuff because, I mean, it's funny, you know, sometimes to point out how tweaked out he is and everything. But I don't think that he's particularly influential or anything like that. He should really stick to Twitter, where he can just write a conspiracy theory and then put the I'm thinking face to make you think that he was. In video, it's harder to fool us into thinking that any thought went into what he just said. Other right wingers have come up with ways to cloud the issue. Ben Shapiro, he speaks really fast. I think that's what Charlie Kirk is trying to do, but the Coke isn't producing something that can masquerade as logic. It's just not. I'm worried for you. That's all. At the end of the day, I'm just worried for you and for your family. If you gather in a big group and give them COVID, you big idiot. Yeah. Seriously, like these people, look at how confident they are. They have been wrong about the pandemic from day one, and month after month after month after month, they're wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong, and thousands of people die, and then another 1,000 deaths a day, and then another 1,000 deaths a day, and they just keep telling you it's not serious. We've now passed 250,000 registered deaths, and they have learned nothing. They've unlearned things they knew from the very beginning. So if you, like, you can choose. You can go with me and JR, you can go with Charlie Kirk when making your Thanksgiving holiday decisions. Regrettably, millions of Americans are gonna go with the Charlie Kirk school, and many people are gonna get sick, and many people are gonna die. And that whole thing from Scott Atlas of this being the last Thanksgiving, that is gonna be a self-fulfilling prophecy, because a lot of these selfish a-holes are gonna kill their family members this Thanksgiving. All I want is for people to not die. And if they don't, I will be thankful of that, because being thankful is important.
And it's sad, it has to be said. But again, similar to the mask stuff and the social distancing stuff, people who decide not to be around their certain family members during Thanksgiving this year, they don't hate them. In fact, oddly enough, they're humans and they're gonna miss those family members. They're gonna wish they could do the same Thanksgiving celebration, which is why throughout this entire year, people like us have been going after this president and his administration for destroying and absolutely ignoring the response to this, because we actually enjoy being around people. It's weird how that works. Do something responsible so that you can have the good times that you wish you could have with those folks. And if you do that, it doesn't mean you hate it and don't want to do it. I don't know how that logic gets lost. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Ugh. JR, thank you so much for joining us. In the meal that is TDR, you're the stuffing, buddy.
Sprocket just ran away. Sighted. He was literally right here.
Oh, come on, Sprocket.
He ran away. Well,
Sprocket. He's the cranberry sauce. Okay, well, unfortunately, it looks like we're not going to get Sprocket, but JR, thank you as always for joining me. I really do appreciate it.
As always, good time. See you guys.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.